Hello and welcome to Connections. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. It is a Tuesday morning, and Rick, welcome.
Good morning, Bill. It's a great day, and things seem to be getting a little bit better. I've been looking for some good news. Maybe not great news, but we've got, you know, it's not all bad.
Okay, that's great. Not all bad. Yeah, you're right. We have Paul Layton with us who will share some, I think, some good news stories with us. And we'll also have Dave Radigan with us. And he'll I'm going to ask him some questions about the Massachusetts four-stage plan to reopen business. Well, that'll be coming up in our program as well. Rick, you know, you before we started this, we were talking about mid-May. So we are now in mid-May, I think, right?
I think so. And it's funny, you guys were talking on the sports night about sports this time of year, and it just seems so strange. You know, it doesn't seem all that strange to be missing some of the sports because it's been so cold. And I remember coaching baseball in this weather, how cold it is. But it'll warm up eventually. And, you know, I do think it feels there's a little more optimism in the air, I think.
Let's hope so. Again, just ahead, Paul Layton and Dave Radigan here today on our Tuesday Connection Show. Joining us on Connections at this time is Salem News reporter Paul Layton. Paul, welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us.
Thanks for having me, Bill. I appreciate it.
Paul, you have spent the last maybe 6 weeks, a lot of that inside, doing stories over the phone. But of late, you've been outside. You've been getting outside and seeing a few stories and reporting on them firsthand. And I want to maybe talk to you about that little change and then talk about a story that you had in Monday's paper on Mother's Day, on a story from Mother's Day. So I guess, first of all, what's happened? How are you able to get outside more? Is it just kind of the way things are playing out?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you take the precaution. Obviously, everybody's wearing masks and you keep 6 feet away. And it's a little difficult to do interviews on those circumstances, but this pandemic and let people know what's going and, you know, try to be safe at the same time. So like last week I went to the train station in Beverly just to talk to the very few people who are still riding the train and what that's like. And I went to Beverly High School to talk to the food services workers who were giving out the free lunches. And I went to a park where they're being delivered to. There was a long line of people, you know, waiting for the food there, and I talked to them. And yesterday, on Sunday, I went to a nursing home in Beverly and talked to families who were visiting, obviously staying outside, visiting through the window on Mother's Day. It was quite a scene.
Yeah, tell us about that story, because that story is a remarkable story that was in Monday's Salem News. Again, you go to a senior living facility, if you will, on Mother's Day, and you catch a family, you know, hanging outside a window, you know, greeting their 100-year-old mother.
Yeah, it was amazing. And one of the sons has been in a band for years, and he and one of his bandmates were set up on the outdoor patio at the nursing home. This was the Ledgewood nursing home up in back of Beverly Hospital. And they were playing music. They were doing a concert for his mother and for the other residents inside. And then when the son actually called me, you know, got in touch with us later that night when he got home from that, which was a great visit with other relatives involved, he got a call from the nursing home that his mother had passed away soon after the family left. And he was obviously sad about that, but he was also grateful that the fact that they got a chance to visit her that one last time and to perform this show. She had loved music, and so I think it meant a lot to her. And he said he felt like she was sort of you know, holding out till that one last visit from family.
Yeah, I want to tie these two stories together. So the story that you're just telling us about now, a senior facility, but you're also doing a story on Hometown Heroes, and you've done a number of those in the paper. Salem News has had done the Hometown Heroes there, but Northeast Arc, a residential facility where workers are dealing with, and like they would in senior centers, dealing, they can't take a day off. You know, they have to show up for work, And of course, in the senior center, it's very serious implication for seniors should they contract COVID-19, the coronavirus or whatever. But tell us about the story regarding the Northeast Arc.
Yeah, sure. It's sort of under the radar. There's been a lot of attention, and rightfully so, in the nursing homes. But there are also these smaller group homes, Northeast Arc, which is the agency based in Danvers that helps people with disabilities. And they have more than 40 group homes on the North Shore. These are places where, you know, they blend into neighborhoods, and there's no sign out front that says they're a Northeast Arc group home. They usually have about four people living there, and they have staff that go in every day and help them, and they're there around the clock. And so these people are also, the workers are in situations, you know, that can be dangerous. They're in, you know, whenever there's a group living facility. So I spoke with the woman who's the head of the residential program just to talk about that. And she said that, I mean, those are tough jobs under any circumstances. They're not high paying jobs. She said they've, you know, there's been a shortage of workers even before the pandemic. But she said that her staff has been great. They're very dedicated. They're continuing to work. They're obviously taking all these safety precautions. But, you know, the staff members get to know the people who live in these homes. They sort of become part of the, you know, family in a way. So anyway, the story is just a chance to highlight the work of these people who are also on the front lines along with doctors and nurses and a lot of other people.
Yeah, there's so many people that are showing up for work every day. We don't realize it. Well, we do realize it, I think, but certainly right. Those are workers. We know the medical workers, hopefully they have all the protective equipment that they need. But, you know, you go into these other facilities and it was, I'm sure the learning curve or the PPE curve, whatever it was a little slower in coming to some of these other places as just by design. You know, that's just the way we respond. But anyway, right. You're right. Good stories to follow that. Hey, there's another story, Paul, that I saw last week. It caught my attention was that Beverly was thinking of having like a regular graduation. I mean, that's the phrasing I thought I saw last week in the paper, but that's still to be decided, right?
Yeah, that basically the superintendent told the school committee that they're holding out hope is the way she put it, you know, realizing that it's, I don't know what the chances are, probably slim. But in the meantime, they're coming up with this plan, and the superintendent didn't want to, you know, give all the details yet because they haven't worked them all out. But it would basically be, she said they surveyed, seniors and their parents. And most people don't want a virtual graduation, you know, which is one alternative obviously a lot of schools are looking at. So there, Beverly High School is looking into the possibility of having students and their parents come into the high school, I would assume one group at a time, you know, the student and their parents, with the student in the cap and gown and actually, you know, receiving their diploma, and parents can take pictures. And so that's kind of the general idea of, so that would be an in-person graduation, but obviously not a group of, you know, hundreds of people sitting in the stands at Hurd Stadium.
So they could, maybe they could put the address, the commencement address on, make that virtual, and the kids could choose whether they want to listen to that or not.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be part of it. I think that, you know, these speeches will be online, and I don't know, it's going to be a combination as, you know, everybody's trying to work things out and, you know, borrow ideas from other people. So I know in other, you know, communities on the North Shore, they're meeting and trying to decide what to do. So that's a big issue. It's tough for these kids. I have a daughter who's a senior at Beverly High School, and I have another daughter who's a senior at Salem State, who are both, you know, supposed to graduate in the next few weeks, and that's all on hold, you know. So it's difficult, but it's just another thing you have to deal with during this time.
Well, I'm thinking, Paul, here's what I'm thinking. Go to Hurd Stadium. Let's say you have five kids there at the whole football field, five kids, their families. I don't think that's overdoing. I think you could space that out pretty well. You have, now the mayor usually does a speech, I would imagine, at the graduation. Yeah. So five, how many kids? So if you do this, let's say over 3 or 4 days, the mayor gives a speech about, you know, he'll only have to give his speech maybe 125 times. and so on. And they just cycle through there over. Hopefully the weather will be good. We get a 3 or 4 day span of great weather. Families get their slot. They come in. They do their graduation. That's probably not in that plan that the superintendent is looking at.
Hey, you know, who knows? I think everything's on the table at this point. I mean, I think people really are trying to come up with a solution, and it's really difficult. But I do like the idea of having something in person, even if it's one student, one family at a time. You know, I do like that idea better than the virtual graduation.
No, I totally agree with that too. I think that would make a lot of sense. I mean, there is, when you think about it, you know, Paul, going way back to our graduations, you know, you do remember putting on that cap and gown. I mean, it's as you know, as much as I'm not big into ceremonies as such, I can appreciate the idea of putting on the cap and gown. I you know, that does come back to you for sure. Yeah.
Right. No, I think it's tough for seniors, particularly in high school, because this is the time where, you know, there are all these other events leading up to graduation, the prom and all, and, you know, they had an internship program at Beverly High School that they had to cancel. And so it's a tough time for seniors. It really is.
Hey, one last story I'd love to have you talk about would be the story about the Salem restaurant owner, Giovanni Graziani, maybe. Tell me about that story you had last week.
Yeah, Giovanni passed away last week of COVID-19, and it was he and his wife Paula ran a cafe, Graziani, in downtown Salem for, I don't know, more than 25 years. It was a great place. I had been there a couple of times, but I talked to Mayor Driscoll, and she said it's the type of place you go in, and they know everybody. It was just a husband and wife operation, and you know, Giovanni was from Italy originally and had learned how to cook over there. And they had just closed their business. They retired, a couple of years ago. And he was, I think he was 70, 71 maybe, but he was healthy and in good shape. His wife, Paula, said he had never spent a night overnight in the hospital, you know, but somehow he contracted COVID-19 and passed away. So I wrote a story on him, and it got quite a reaction because they were such a part of the community. And we're trying to do some stories on people who are passing away from the virus, just to, as we say, you know, the cliche is you put a face on all these numbers. You know, you hear all these numbers every day, but it's real people who are part of the community. We're trying to do stories on them as much as we can.
You know, it's funny when you, not funny, but it reminds me back with 9/11, and remember all of the people that passed away. There were local connections from Boston area, from the North Shore, many of them actually. But even you'd watch these stories nationally and they'd focus on these people. It could be a family in New York, a family in New Jersey or whatever, but they're all really kind of fascinating stories, but it does take personalize a life. And like you mentioned, a person like Giovanni, you know, he was such a part of so many lives for people in the city of Salem over those years. And an interesting story, an immigrant, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what we're trying to do. And that's where I feel where, you know, just to put in a plug for local newspapers, as you know, it's tough times for local newspapers. It was before the pandemic. It's being made even worse now with all the businesses closed and, you know, the advertisers, you know, going away. But we feel like, you know, like you said, you want to document this on a local level. You know, it's not, I mean, it's a national, it's an international story, but we want to bring the local stories to people also.
Yeah. So again, you're right to bring that up, a plug for our local newspapers and the work that they do. And, you know, it is a living history, basically, right? In a way, yeah, for sure.
That's what it is. Yeah. No, that's what I appreciate what you do too, Bill. It's just another, you know, local outlet, you know, where it's hard to turn this into a viable business model, you know. So, you know, as many outlets as we have that can keep tabs on what's going on locally, I think is great.
Well, Paul, always great talking with you. Thanks for all the work that you do and all the work the Salem News does, as a matter of fact, as well, for all the stories and coverage and all the positive stories that we're seeing, you know, in light of the pandemic here. Paul, thanks again.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Paul Layton from the Salem News. A daily news podcast for the North Shore, North Shore Today, North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, as we keep you connected with the North Shore. Welcome back to Connections. Bill Newell here, joined by Dave Radigan. Dave, we're reopening in Massachusetts. Governor making the announcement on Monday that they have a four-phase approach. Whenever that happens, there is a four-phase approach to reopening. So what do you think?
I think it's great that we're reopening. I hope it's not too soon. There's a lot of science behind this. I know a lot of folks in Facebook don't believe in science, but even as they use the technology created by science, they don't believe in it. But I'm hoping that they do it right, and I'm hoping to get back to work myself.
Now, I'm looking at a chart that is supplied by the state of Massachusetts on their four-phase approach to reopening, and it reminded me of something you mentioned to me a moment ago, Dave, and that was back after 9/11, we went into these security alerts. We went into – now, trust me, I don't remember the colors, but there must have been a red – I know there was an orange. I don't know if there was a yellow, but there had to have been a red, maybe a blue. Color alerts, right? I mean, for the different phases.
I don't think there was a blue. There was definitely an orange code. I think it was yellow, orange. I can't remember.
Yeah, and back then in 2001 after 9/11, if somebody said it was, we went up to elevated risk of orange, we'd go, oh, okay, I know what that is. You know, you know what I'm saying? So here's what we got. Now here's what we got. So these are the alerts here, color coded. You tell me what color. I'm going to test you on your color, on your association on color, because all colors, you know, when we think of colors, orange is Halloween, pumpkins, right? Green and red, Christmas kind of a thing.
Yep, primary color.
Brown is probably Thanksgiving, maybe, right? We have a turkey or corn. Tan, maybe that's a fall kind of a color. All right, so. Yep. Our current state, our stay-at-home order right now in Massachusetts, what color would that be, Dave?
I would think that would be highest threat level red.
Red. Bingo. Okay. Now, beautiful. Now the phase one start. What color would that be? Now, that would be the first thing we're moving into that piece. The golf course is opened over the weekend. Maybe some businesses, a few businesses will open. What color would that be?
That would be, I don't know. See, you said golf courses. I was thinking fuchsia. Then I thought, it probably wouldn't be fuchsia. It probably wouldn't sound right. Probably green.
Okay, green. I mean, I would say possibly, but...
I think the golf course thing might have thrown me.
Knowing that the next phases are less restrictive as we move along here, I don't know what I would say. I would have gone with blue, I think, but they went with it's like a yellow, kind of a yellow color, kind of an orange.
They're going for warning colors.
All right. Yeah.
It's like the traffic lights. Green means go. So there's probably no green on there.
There is a green on there. There is a green on there, but it's interesting where it is. So now phase two would be what? This is where it gets really tricky, Dave.
Okay, so it starts at red, then it goes to yellow.
Yeah.
If it's a traffic light, it's green, yellow, red. With green meaning go, red meaning stop, and yellow meaning go really fast before it turns to red. So I'm going to go with orange.
All right. Okay. It's making more sense to me now, but I had to watch this and go over this with you for it to make sense. So the next phase, phase two, is a pale green. Okay. A pale green. So you went from a red to a yellow. That's the caution in the middle of the traffic light.
Yeah.
And now you've gone to a pale green. Now, Dave, what's phase three, less restrictive? What would that be? If the one just before was a pale green, what would phase three be?
Pale green, and then it goes to – does it eventually go to a green?
It does go
I'm going to say Kelly green.
Well, I'll give you a correct on that. It's green. It's phase three is green.
So it's – wait. It went from yellow to light green to green.
But there's still one more phase, which is called the new normal, which is after we get the vaccine and all of that stuff back.
Okay.
And see, that to me would be the totally green. That's what I would go with, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It is a different color altogether.
Yeah. Why is
not white?
Not a total color altogether. Looking at the future and the new normal with all my optimism, I'm going to say black.
The new normal. Yeah. Well, it's blue, and it's kind of a light blue too. So, I get it now. I get the traffic light thing. Thanks to you, Dave. I get the different phases of green. Okay, I get it. And the blue. We'll have to live with it. We'll have to live with it. By that time, I think we will have forgotten the colors. And I'm guessing most people are not even going to associate colors with this, but I'm just doing this off of the directive from the state of Massachusetts.
I don't know how they're going to – I mean, you talk about splitting hairs. If I had been on this committee, my phase reentry, what I would have done is I would have opened it first to first, I would have opened it to like just people you don't like, you know, like just take a poll. They can do the census. They can say, which of your neighbors do you not like? And just if you have people who score a high enough negative, you know, get enough negative votes, you send them a little go ahead. You let them go out first.
You mean like an insurance guy? I have an insurance guy that I on our my street. I love the guy. He's a great guy. But
you're like an insurance guy.
I don't want him to think I'm singling him out. No.
No, it doesn't sound like terrific. You're singling him out.
No.
It took you so long to come up with him, too.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm just thinking in the past, I mean, I don't know.
You don't like and you think insurance guy. So you had an insurance guy before you didn't like?
No, I don't know.
And then eventually you get to the point where I think there are some businesses, frankly, that they should just not bother to open. And I'm thinking the dentist. I don't really like to go to the dentist. What if we just tell dentists they can't reopen?
Well, when you say that, Dave, there's a lot of people that are absolutely afraid of going to the dentist. So they must be thrilled about what has happened here in the last 8 weeks is that they can't go to the dentist. I had a dentist appointment canceled last week. And I'm disappointed in a way that I can't go to the dentist because
it was your social event of the week.
Yeah. Like to get out, maybe. Get down there,
get
in the recliner, whatever they have there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So,
well, you know, the other thing I wonder about is once they open, I mean, I think of the courts, the district courts especially, and, you know, there's got to be a giant backlog of cases in civil courts. They're going to have such a huge backlog. I don't know if it will be a good thing or a bad thing or what, but you're going to have I guess they're going to have to work to make sure the courtrooms aren't that crowded. But that's you know, any business like that, we've got to move a lot of people. You know, maybe in the district court, they'll have that you know, that traffic cop, that, you know, that clerk with a mask on saying, you stand here, you stand 6 feet over there. Oh, you've got to stand 50 feet over there. I think it'll be interesting to see which businesses are considered essential, and which ones are considered essential, and obviously for a lot of people, Bill, you know, a lot of businesses that need to open are the small ones, and the small retailers, especially I think of, and the restaurants, and it'll be hopefully we won't be at yellow too long before we go to light green.
Yeah, exactly. And then to a darker green on top of that. That only makes sense that we could go to a darker green after that. But
yes, it only makes sense. It only makes sense that we go from red to yellow to dark green.
Going, yoing, yoing, yoing. Not that I got it right away, I admit. But, there are certain businesses. For example, like what's the men's clothing store? I'm blanking out on the name.
Milton's, Caps.
Caps, Milton's, whatever. I mean, those stores, Gentleman's Warehouse, whatever the stores were, yeah. they traditionally didn't have a lot of people in them. So, I mean, I think you could go, you know, stores like that. I mean, they are opening up Targets, and those stores are open, I believe, right?
They've been open, yeah. I don't know about Target, but I know Walmart's been open. I know that, you hear people complain about hardware stores being open. I know Staples has been open, which, you know, I run a business. I need stuff once in a while. I'm glad that they're open. They're essential to me. Hardware stores and liquor stores were open, and I heard people grousing about that, but I'm thinking, you know, we weren't allowed to paint our rooms and get drunk. How do we get through this?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And by the way, if anyone is really if you need Post-it notes, I did some cleaning here in my area here, and I have a few extra Post-it notes. If you really do need them, I do have some Post-it notes.
Well, you're a great humanitarian, Bill.
Yeah. And just let me know, Dave. I'll send you some if you need them. Dave, we'll let you go with that. How about that?
Thank you, Bill.
All right. You stay safe and keep that mask on. Dave, Dave Raddick.
That's what she said.
Yeah. This is Connections.
Well, Bill, I just want to mention the city of Gloucester has started its reopening task force meetings, and I believe they had the first one yesterday. And again, to me, this is pointing toward optimism. I don't know about the governor's reopening stuff. I mean, that's just I just hope it stays on track and that we start on next Monday on the 18th. But Gloucester Mayor Safathia Romeo Taken announced the city of Gloucester's reopening task force, and they held their first kickoff meeting, I believe it was yesterday. And she has announced that the chairperson of this task force is Public Health Director Karen Carroll. And she's quoted as saying the city of Gloucester has taken significant, unprecedented, precautionary measures to limit person-to-person contact and to slow the spread of the virus. And on the city's website, which is gloucester-mat.gov, there is a link where you can go to put in your input. That would be the way to do it, is to put your input in or put in your input. Anyway, it's it's an email link to reopening at gloucester-mass.gov, gloucester-ma.gov. And you can put your ideas there that will be submitted to the task force, and they'll send it out to the appropriate committee. There are 7 different subcommittees, business groups, tourism, food establishments and bars, recreation, open spaces, special populations, youth, and religion/cultural/private social events. So, you know, it's underway. That's all I can hang on to.
Wow, there's a category there for all of us, I think, huh, Rick?
Hopefully.
You know, if you want to put your input in, do you need the 2 cents? You know what I'm saying? You need two. I don't care about your 2 cents worth of input.
2 cents would be better than the other phrase. Yeah, absolutely. And I would think that people would be would want to be at least, at least be courteous.
I'll tell you what. We'll strike a deal with the mayor, folks. You can go to that website, and we'll waive the 2 cents for you. All right, we'll waive that 2 cents for you. You don't have to pay the 2 cents. Hey, I got a note here. This is, albeit at the bottom left of today's front page of the Daily Item of Lynn, but it's a good story. This is done by Bill Brotherton, who is their item features editor. And here, let me just read a little bit of it, and you'll get the details. A vacant lot on the corner of Union and Exchange Streets, that's right in downtown Lynn, will soon be transformed into a downtown park for all to enjoy. Construction has begun on what will likely be named Frederick Douglass Park, a tribute to the abolitionist leader who lived in Lynn in the 1800s. It will be about the... It will abut the Lynn Museum and Historical Society in the Lynn Arts Building and include lots of grass and performance stage and perimeter seating and benches. The site was most recently home to a weekly farmer's market, which has been relocated. So that's great. I mean, Frederick Douglass, a piece of Lynn history, significant piece of Lynn history. And it would be nice and it'd be appropriate to have a park named after him right in the heart of downtown Lynn. So there's a little good news there.
That's good. That's good. Absolutely. And, you know, get some green, get some oxygen producing plants there and a nice place to go to sit down and relax. Frederick Douglass Park. Is that what it's going to be named? Frederick Douglass Park?
That's what they're thinking. That's what the story indicates.
Cool.
Yeah, would make sense.
I want to mention the fire up in Essex.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday. In fact, we had just gone by there. And we were talking about going to Essex Seafood. Essex Seafood is on Essex Avenue, on Route 133 between Gloucester and downtown Essex. And it's a little difficult to notice because it's just a sign out front, but then you have to go down a dirt driveway out back, and it's sort of an eat in the rough shack, but the food there is fantastic. And they had a fire, I guess, that was caused by a gas heater on Sunday evening around 11 o'clock, and the estimated damage is $250,000 worth. So there's no idea, obviously, at this early stage as to how long it'll take to get repaired and so on. But we wish the owners well. It's a great place to go. The prices are good, and it's a great little piece of Americana in addition to delicious seafood.
Yeah, that story broke. I think it was, yesterday. It was Sunday night. You're right, Rick, right? Wasn't that the fire? Yeah. So, best of luck to them. And as if you need any other setbacks at this time, for sure. That's kind of, it makes it all the more tragic, for sure.
Very difficult.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us for today on Connection. And again, a special thanks to our two guests, Paul Layton from the Salem News, Dave Radigan, writer, educator, comedian, and so on. And Rick, we'll be back again. We'll keep our fingers crossed, see if we're back here tomorrow with another edition of Connections, right?
Absolutely. You got to think positive, Bill, and keeping the fingers crossed, knocking on wood, holding on to the rabbit's foot, you name it.
And putting in our 2 cents whenever possible.
We're going to put our input in. Yes.
Getting our input, put our input in. And for you folks who want to put the input in, hey, we the 2 cents are on us. I'm afraid, Rick, if they get a lot of input, that's going to cost us big time. I'm just concerned about that. I mean, a big thing like that, I mean, we could be talking dollars.
It's not in writing, Bill, but I think we'll be okay.
All right, there you go. Rick Moore, Bill Newell, this is Connections.